welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I thank you so much for joining me here on the program. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we link to our guests' website so that you can do further investigation, research. If what you are hearing is interesting to you, we encourage you to check it out, because I think that it is a most interesting process of doing this kind of research. And we don't reinvent the wheel, okay? We give you the information, and you, we're the portal. That's what I like to refer to it as, the portal, okay? And so check it out, and we encourage you to be a part of what we're doing here, trying to change the world a little at a time, one person at a time. There is no strong arming or anything. It's all up to you. It's all entirely up to you. As a matter of fact, on today's program, we're going to find out just exactly how all up to you it is. I think this is going to be a fascinating program. I always struggle with the phrase, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. And I suppose it's accurate, because as I've shared many times on this program, I've always wondered, where does a person go? Where does the essence, the soul, the spirit, and we'll get definitions in a bit, after it drops the big overcoat called the physical body? What is the person going through? What's happening? What are they doing? Where are they going? Well, today we're going to, I think, get a great insight into that. We're going to be talking with a representative from the Newton Institute, the Life Between Lives Hypnotherapy. There's a website. I'm going to give it to you now. It's called newtoninstitute.org. We're going to talk about stories of the afterlife. We're going to talk about, there are a number of books that the founder, Michael Newton, has written. Two of them that I have actually read. And I want to tell you how grateful I am, not only to be a recipient of audiobooks, both growing up, but even today, through different websites and different programs, but also producing audiobooks. If you are interested in recording it, I can certainly assist you in that. But I have to say how wonderful it is to be able to listen to a book, sometimes by the author, and just take that in through the ears and process it. I don't have to sit there and hold anything and focus with my eyes. I can just use my ears and my imagination. And it's a wonderful thing. And I've had that great privilege of doing that with these two books. One of them is entitled Destiny of the Soul, and the other is Journey of the Soul. My guest on the program today is Dr. Anne Clark. She is with the Newton Institute. And, Doctor, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure.
This is, as I say, I found it at the beginning of the first book, Journey of the Soul, gratifying, illuminating, exciting, thrilling, a relief in one sense. But as I went further and further, I became more and more frustrated, because I thought, wait a minute, this sounds an awful lot like where I am right now, with the hierarchy and the structure and the forms and this and that and the other. But it's all in spirit. And we're going to get into that aspect of it. But I want to, for you to share with our listeners a little bit about the Newton Institute, but also Michael Newton and the research that he has been doing for a very, very long time. Fascinating work.
Yes. Well, Dr. Newton is a hypnotherapist, and he, during one of his practice sessions, asked a client to go back to the source of an issue that she was dealing with. And much to his surprise, she went back very far, back to a past life. And thus began 35 years of research and over 7,000 case studies, from which Dr. Newton developed a structure of the afterlife, what happens when we go to the other side, and developed a method for us to visit the other side without going, without dying, or without going through a near-death experience.
And how did you get involved in this? What is it about this work that so intrigued you?
I'm a nurse, and I do energy work. And when I was working on a client one day, a client who had had back problems off and on for years, every 3 or 4 months, he would be just incapacitated with severe back pain. He'd been through every test, seen every doctor, every specialist, and nothing could be found that was causing this pain. So he would come to me when he had this severe pain, and the energy work seemed to help him. During one of our sessions, he started talking about things that were not present, and it occurred to me that he was perhaps visiting a past life. So I worked with him on that and found out that he went back to a medieval time when he was jousting in a battle with a long stick riding a horse. He was knocked off his horse and landed on a jagged pile of rocks and broke his back, and he was left there to die a miserable death. And he still carried with him the pain that he experienced during that time. So during that session, I was able to work with his subconscious mind and release him from that pain from the past. And following that, he never had any more episodes of his severe pain.
Wow. And this just happened spontaneously.
Yes, it was a surprise to me, but it piqued my interest. So I went on to first learn hypnotherapy and then learn past life regression, and then go on to learn life between life regression. And that is what I currently practice.
Now, when I started down this road, I was shared this information as far as the Newton Institute, and I must have let it sit for a while because I went back to an email and going, Newton Institute, and I clicked on the link, and next thing I know, I'm reading through this, and then I gave you a call, or I guess I sent an email first, and anyway, and you suggested a couple of books, the ones that I mentioned on the program, Journey of the Soul and Destiny of the Soul. And this is not about directly, this is not about reincarnation and, you know, rehashing your past lives. This is about that space between lives, life between lives.
Yes.
In terms of what happens from the instant, as I use the metaphor, that we take off the big overcoat called the physical body, then where do we go? One of the first questions, and if he mentioned it in either of these two books, I must have missed it, but it talks about the infinite number of souls, if that's the correct term, is spirit, soul, essence, and I guess we might want to decide which one we want to use in this program, to describe that which animates the physical body, that which resides, that is non-physical, but apparently has consciousness, and I guess we take that consciousness with us from life to life.
Yes.
But
yes,
I'm curious as to, as probably a lot of people are, where the beginning was. In other words, how were the singular first soul or souls created? Where did they come from? Who made them? And it goes way on, from my understanding, way before the Big Bang.
That remains a mystery. One of the things that's exciting about this work is we have yet many answers to find.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and that's fine. I know that a lot of people that I am associated with here, especially in Santa Barbara, are extremely fearful of death because they're afraid that there is nothing after death and that they want the truth. And even though this is scientific evidence of the existence between lives, let alone other lives that we live, reincarnation, doesn't one have to choose to believe that the science is accurate and valid I mean, it's still coming down to belief. You know this. You've been doing this for many years as well. You know the research. But there are those out there listening who are sitting here going, well, yeah, that's all fine, well, and good, but I don't know that it's true. How do we get to that place where we can know, shall we say, the biblical phrase, that you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free?
Yes. Well, once one has experienced a life between life regression, universally we find that their fear of death is gone because they have visited the afterlife and they have then a knowing that there's more and that they are more.
So that's really the first place for an individual to start, is to seek out and find a practitioner who can take them through this particular process. And we're not just talking about any hypnosis, are we?
No, this is a very specialized form. The Newton Institute members, there are about 200 worldwide, provide this service. They're highly trained hypnotherapists who have also been trained in past life regression and in life between life regression as well. They go through a rigorous process, and they're all very skilled practitioners.
And on your website, newtoninstitute.org, there is a place where you can locate the practitioner nearest you, as it were. It appears that if, as far as Santa Barbara's concerned, it looks like the closest might be in the Los Angeles area for us. But, you know, if this is something that is going to relieve you of the stress and the anxiety over what comes next, you know, it'd be worth the trip. And who knows? Maybe even these practitioners might even travel. We don't know. You need to go to newtoninstitute.org and find out. This, to me, again, is fascinating as far as this process of learning. And there's so much information. I think that's the other thing. Maybe it was a little overwhelming for me when I first started reading this, because there was so much information and so much detail. That's what really amazed me, because I always was under the impression that there was a certain blurriness or fog to the afterlife, to the spirit world, that, you know, it's almost like your answer to how did this all begin, that there has to, you know, you want to maintain a certain level of mystery to the spirit world. But when a soul comes into being, and by the way, was that ever described to Dr. Newton in any of these sessions, or has it been described to you by people you have had under hypnosis, as to how a particular soul comes into being?
We have received various pieces of information about that. But as a researcher, and as the research tradition of the Newton Institute is, we will collect a lot of data before we make any conclusions about that. Because sometimes we receive slightly different information that can be confusing until we see the total picture. So we don't make any judgments about this. We don't put out that information until it's been very thoroughly researched.
Okay. And why are we being, why are these souls being created? For what purpose?
During a typical life between life regression, each individual will learn about their life purpose. But an overall purpose for incarnating and coming to Earth is to learn and grow and evolve to a higher spiritual level.
And if I am correct, and I don't necessarily want to give out this information as we go, I'd rather have you give this out, but in terms of leading you into a conversation about this, the souls who choose to come to this planet, and there are other choices that can be made if I'm understanding correctly.
Correct.
That coming to Earth is like taking on a master's
program. I would agree with that. Earth is considered to be one of the more difficult incarnations.
And
there are many challenges.
And so for those who have chosen it, I should say for those of us, who have chosen it, there was a comment made many a couple of 3 years ago in one of my programs. We were talking about this very subject matter in a little different context, and it was said that The spirit world views those of us souls who are here on earth and who choose to incarnate here, they view us as heroes, especially now in this linear time frame of the 21st century.
Yes, and let me say that time is a construct that we use here on earth.
Mm-hmm.
We now are learning from quantum physics that everything is going on at the same time.
So my beginning and my ending and all the middles of this life as well as other lives is currently in flow.
Correct.
And so it is actually possible to move, and again, using our vernaculars on the earth here, it is possible then to move forward and backward in time, so to speak, from past events to even to future events.
Yes, we can visit the past or the future.
But we can't change the events in those places, can we?
We can heal in the present time, and that will heal everything throughout our personal universe.
Okay. I mean, it's just so many. Oh, it's like my brain is about to burst here because there's so many directions that we could go with this right now. As I said, when I started reading these two books, it just blew me away. And I'm curious as to, because I know that you have, I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume that you have had the opportunity to work with or be in the presence of and communicate with Michael Newton.
Yes.
What was his reaction at the beginning of all this when he first started getting this information?
He was very shocked when he first started getting the information. And he was fascinated, and he made it his life's work. He chose to keep this to himself for a number of years because of all the ridicule and questioning that he might receive while he was going through it. So he waited until he had enough solid data to be able to put out a full story.
Well, I can't understand how anybody would be critical of Dr. Newton and this research. And I say that facetiously. And it's really unfortunate because as I'm reading through, I'm looking at my present day reality in such a different way, almost to the extent of devoid of emotion, that it's like, okay, accepting what I've read as true. That what's happening in my life now is part of not only and we can talk about the contract that we sign when we first incarnate. And am I correct? We sign a new contract every time we incarnate?
That's right. Every time we plan our experience, we even choose our bodies and we choose the experiences that we want to have in the lifetime. We set goals, what we want to learn. And it's all planned out before we come back to Earth.
But there is no contract between lives.
We do continue to grow and learn on the other side as well. We continue to work on many of the same goals, but we learn much more quickly during an incarnation. We can think of Earth as being a big school,
mm-hmm.
a school where we're play acting. We come back and play out different roles here on Earth so that we can learn things from various perspectives. For example, we might be the person who cheats on a spouse in one life, and then in another life, we'll be the spouse that gets cheated on so that we can learn from both sides and grow to a place where perhaps that will no longer be an issue.
And as the observer of my own life in this time, that's kind of what was going through my mind, and I would rehash the events that I could recall of this lifetime, both as a child going through the various things I went through, my first marriage and now in my second, my different jobs and the career that I have chosen. It is to me, it's extremely enlightening to view one's life after having even just read Even if folks, if even if you just pick up one of these books and you read through the material, you read through the information, or you go to the website and you read through the information that's available there, it really does. It changes your perspective. And I have a friend here in Santa Barbara who I was sharing all of this with, and she's the one that that spurred me on to somebody else that we're going to have on the program in the near future about the same general subject. And she says the same thing, that a lot of people that she knows who go through these kinds of experiences, be it through LBL hypnosis or whatever other name you want to give it, through other people, it's extremely freeing. And I guess the real question, Dr. Clark, is how long lasting is this freedom, if you will, this sense of freedom of, I get it now, I'm feeling good about this, before we're surrounded once again by all of the minutiae of the world in which we live, and we forget all of that?
Well, we are planning to do some research on that, but I can speak from my own experience. Since I had my first life between life regression, my perspective has changed completely, and it's difficult to go back once you've learned these things. In my case, nothing has changed. I continue to hold that perspective.
Yeah, I often tell people when they listen to this radio program, and I usually share this at the end of the broadcast, that if you've listened to the interview, it's too late. You cannot unlisten. Now you must deal with the information, so you can't go back, you know?
Yes.
But I try to put a positive spin on that, and that's a good thing, because it's something that you need to at least research a little bit and investigate. We're not asking anybody on this program, who listens to this program, Dr. Clark, to accept and take our word for it. We want them to do the research. We want them to pick up the books or go to the website and watch the videos, which there are a few on the website, newtoninstitute.org. But I think that it sounds to me like go beyond the just the reading of the books. Find a practitioner and have this experience. And is it sufficient to just do it once, or do you suggest maybe a series of 2, 3, 4, 5 sessions to really get the meat of who and what you are and why you are where you are?
One session is sufficient for completely changing your perspective on life, but many individuals do choose to have more than one.
Now, as I said at the front end of the program, the spirit world seems to be an awful lot like this world in terms of the structure and the hierarchy and the learning process, as well as the learning curve. And there are souls who, once they've entered following an incarnation, The first thing that I thought of, and this is what really gave me such a sense of relief as I read the beginning of the first book, was, oh, good, I'll get a chance to relax. As the old phrase goes, you know, I don't have time to stop now. I'll sleep when I'm dead. And then there's some certain truth into that you get a chance to rest after an incarnation.
Yes.
And there is no set duration, shall we say, for that rest. It's however long you feel you need.
There's really no time on the other side.
Right. But it's also still an educational process, because there are certain, how can I put it, seminars or classes or workshops that you can take while in spirit, right?
Yes. We continue to learn and grow. But one big difference, there's a lot of strife and angst and suffering and emotions that go on Earth. What we've learned about the afterlife is it's a very comforting, loving, easy environment.
Now, in hearing the dialogue between Dr. Newton and his various case patients, and this may have been the narrator's interpretation as they read, but it seems to me that the individual soul, as he or she is sharing, and again, there's no male or female per se in spirit, if I'm correct.
There's a tendency toward
Okay.
While most spirits are androgynous, some are more feminine than others. Some are more masculine.
Okay. But as they do go through this process, as they're sharing this information with him, as is laid out in these two books in particular, it seems as though there is a certain level of emotion that comes out in the dialogue, especially if he were to ask a question on a relatively sensitive subject, like an experience in a past life. And he then takes them there. Is that right?
He can, yes. And there is emotion, but it's coming from the human individual who's undergoing the experience.
So when a person passes, transitions, I like to use the word transitions, to the spirit world, and they will have a period of rest.
Let me go back to it and say that the typical person who dies will stay around Earth for 1 to 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And stay to comfort those that have been left behind. And they do this through trying to provide comfort, trying to let their loved ones know that they're still around.
And they will often do that through some means of communication, through some sensations, through objects or events or what have you that are familiar to the person here.
Yes, or dreams or thoughts.
So they
typically stay around about 1 to 2 weeks. There are some spirits that get stuck here and stay around for a lot longer until they're helped to the other side.
That leads me to a thought about that one television program that I used to watch quite often. I think it was called The Ghost Whisperer. And that was sort of her job, so to speak. And she didn't choose it per se, but she was there to help people to cross over, to finish unfinished business here so that they could go, quote unquote, into the light.
Yes.
There's an element of all of this that is interesting, and it's discussed. And I want us to discuss it here on the program, and that's the aspect of good and evil. And if I've received the gist of this correctly, there is no, how can I put this? This was sort of the way it was phrased to me. There is no good and evil. Things are just what they are. It's our mental judgments, our ego judgments that define whether it's good or evil. What we see happening is these individuals who are choosing their roles, going through that process of learning their lessons.
Yes, and we do make a plan for what we want to learn before we come to Earth, but we have free will. We may choose to follow that plan once we're here or not follow that plan.
Now, that may not set real well with some folks, because when they look at the events that are going on in our world today, they see some pretty bad, bad people. And then they also see some very good people. You know, we just had Mother Teresa sainted, you know.
Yes.
I have to say I'm one of the fortunate few that had the privilege of being in her presence when she was in Phoenix back, I think it was in the 1980s.
Wonderful.
And that was extraordinary. But there is no, and I guess this is a question to put to you, because there are going to be people from various beliefs and philosophies that are going to sit here going, wait a minute, if there's no evil, is there a heaven or is there a hell?
Well, I wrote a paper a couple of years ago on how findings from life between life regressions compare with teachings of the world religions. Interestingly enough, many of the ancient teachings are very correct about the afterlife, but there are some things that are not found at all so far in our life between life regressions. Let me take the Christian religion, the idea of hell. We've found no such evidence thus far in our work with life between life regression. There's been nothing of that sort.
Okay. And so when you come across things of this nature, the either the absence from our I like to call them ancient wisdom teachings, and the LBL regression information. When you either find the absence of that kind of information, or you find corroboration, what does that tell you in that regard? Does it share with us a little bit about that?
I think what we're attempting to do is build a store of knowledge so that we can follow a path to learn more. If we have the wrong interpretation of things, it will often lead us to a dead end. But if we continue to build information, putting together ancient teachings, current life experiences with what we garner from regressions, we can build a base of knowledge and continue on that path to learn more. My feeling is we're just looking at the tip of the iceberg. Perhaps you've seen the elephant, the blind man touching parts of the elephant,
mm-hmm.
and seeing it as a very different thing. I think that's what's happening right now with the various methods of looking at the afterlife. We're just at the tip of the iceberg, and we're just learning scraps and pieces, and we're attempting to learn more, build our knowledge base, and hopefully eventually be able to put these various pieces together in some meaningful form.
I know that the big picture is something that we'd all love to have, to be able to see what the end game is. And I'm curious as to whether or not that has ever been discussed in any of these sessions with either Dr. Newton or in any of your sessions or others, who I would assume that the other practitioners around the world in some fashion record or document each of their sessions, and do they share it with the Newton Institute?
Well, we are setting up an archive at the Newton Institute of case studies from Life Between Life Regressions, and we have an online journal called Stories of the Afterlife, in which we report case studies each time. You can go to the Newton website to subscribe to Stories of the Afterlife. What we do know from regressions is that a soul will evolve from learnings garnered from the earth incarnations to a point where they no longer need to incarnate here, and they go on to other learnings.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, Earth is but one destination, which implies, and maybe more than just implies, that there are other entities, if you will, there that we're not alone in the universe.
Yes.
And I happen to be watching this one DVD series called, I can't remember the name. Dark Side, I think, is what it's called, something like that. But it has to do with this one individual, and he gets drawn into this organization, this secret organization of our government called Majestic, dealing with aliens and that whole genre. And as I'm watching this, I started thinking about our conversation today, and I want to ask you about that aspect of the rest of the universe, and, you know, who else is out there if we're not alone? And again, we can incarnate into other beings in the universe.
Yes, we can incarnate in on different planets, in different dimensions, different bodies, so to say. You'll notice from Dr. Newton's book, he talked about a term he called hybrid souls.
Yes.
Those are souls who initially incarnated elsewhere in the universe and then chose to come to Earth to help in the evolution of those souls who were incarnating here on Earth for learning purposes.
Now, I've got a little twist on the question here. It has been speculated by those not connected with LBL therapy that this planet is not the origin for humanity. In other words, we didn't start here. Was there any information gathered during any of these sessions, thousands and thousands of individuals, that put any light on our origins as humans?
Well, we continue to gather information on that question, and I don't want to put out anything that sounds like it is what we have discovered.
Mm-hmm.
But, for example, I recently had a regression in which we were told that there was some experimentation about forming a being who could survive in the environment that's here on Earth.
Hmm.
That beings from other parts of the universe came here to set that up. Now, we don't have enough data on this to draw any conclusions at all. Again, I'm going to say we need to learn about this from multiple cases before we can draw any conclusions. But we are getting some tantalizing bits of information pertaining to that question in some of our regressions.
And what about the sequential process, especially that was talked about approaching December 21st, 2012, and the end of the Mayan calendar, that we've been through this particular cycle five times? And that there's been what would be considered a mass extinction of humanity, and then we start it over again. Is there anything there in any of this research?
We have not really received any definitive information about that. No.
Okay. Again, very interesting stuff. I'm quite intrigued just by what we've talked about thus far. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Ann Clark. She's with the Newton Institute. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. As we continue talking with our special guest, her name is Dr. Ann Clark. She is with the Newton Institute. And you have been doing these Life Between Lives regression sessions. And this is a hypnosis. For how long?
I've been doing it for 5 years, and I'm currently TNI's Director of Research.
Okay. And again, this is so intriguing because hypnosis for a long time really didn't have a great deal of credibility. But now it's mainstream. It's been mainstream for a very long time. And so when you do specific types of work in the hypnosis realm, if you will, it seems to me that it's taken a little bit more seriously now than it might have been 30 or 40 or 50 years ago.
Yes, I think it is.
So you, and when was your first LBL regression?
My first one occurred during my training back in 2011.
Okay. Have you had subsequent?
I have not, and we're holding a world conference this year in this next year, 2017, and all of the therapists are going to be coming together, and we're going to do life between life regressions on each other. We're also going to do some research on questions that have been coming up and see if we can make use of all those therapists being together at one time to collect some more research data.
Is the individual conscious of what's going on, of the questions and answers that they're giving, the dialogue that's going on, or is this an unconscious process and you may video or audio record it?
We audio record all sessions. The person is definitely aware of what's going on. They are in a hypnotic trance, but not so deep that they don't know what's going on. Before they have their session, we ask them for what we call a cast of characters. That's all the people that are important to them in their current life, because they may see them on the other side, or they may learn what role those people have played in past lives that will shed light on their current relationships. We also allow the person who's undergoing LBL to ask up to 25 or so questions that they have about their life during their session.
Okay. And again, as you say, when someone goes through this, it literally changes their perspective. Have you had people that say, oh, no, I don't care what I said. This is nuts. Their beliefs are just, they're too vested in their own beliefs in this lifetime to accept what came out?
I have never experienced that with a client, nor have I ever heard of anyone else experiencing that. Typically, someone who goes through this process, to them, it feels very real. And if they were a non-believer before, their perspective has changed by the end of the session.
Hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. I again, fascinated by all of this. So you've shared with us initially that a person, when they pass, they may stay here for a couple of weeks, maybe longer, before they are ready to move on to...
Or they may leave immediately. It varies.
Okay. And they then go where?
Typically they go, they're met by spirits, either their personal spirit guide or perhaps a family member, and they're taken to the afterlife by these individuals. They go to a gateway, and during life between life regression, the typical individual gets to enter the afterlife and have an experience, but there are those who are blocked at the gate and told that they're not quite ready to have this experience yet.
Hmm. So, in spite of the fact that they have met the main prerequisite of dying...
Oh, you're talking about someone who's died,
yes.
Not in life between life regression. Okay, for the person who dies, they're met by someone who helps guide them to the afterlife, and they then go through the gateway. The first thing that usually happens is a debriefing, and that is with their guide, usually, they go over the life that they've just lived, and depending on what that life has been like and what their death was like, they may need a period of rest and recuperation. There are areas that they can go to where they can rest, and they can stay there as long as they need to.
Okay.
Following that, often they're greeted by others, their soul family, and others who've known them in other lives. And there's a very joyous reunion at that point.
So we will actually have the opportunity to, and I say this very loosely, see our relatives, only because they are part of what is referred to as a cluster or a circle. It reminds me of Google and how you can have this circle of friends in Google, and it's the same kind of thing. And this particular circle of friends or souls does tend to hang together from one lifetime to the next in different roles. Is that correct?
That is correct. Small groups tend to incarnate together. Someone might be a mother in one lifetime, a daughter in the next, and perhaps even a wife in a third lifetime. They play different roles in each other's lives as they learn and grow.
Hmm. Again, it's extraordinary. I tend to lean, because it seems to resonate with me, I tend to lean more towards the information that you're sharing, that it makes sense. And the reason why I say that is because when I first started working in computers, and my father in the 70s, he went to computer programming school in college. And he would come home with the big boxes of fanfold paper and the punch cards. And as I began learning about computers in the 90s, and this was, of course, when the internet was just coming online for the general public with, of course, AOL and so forth, my perspective of a computer was that it was the outward manifestation of the way the human mind or brain functions. You have a hard drive, and you have memory, and you have the CPU, and you have the all of the peripherals for audio and video and so on and so forth. I thought, you know, this is awful similar to the way we have been designed. I use that example to say that, as I mentioned, my frustration in reading these books as I got later into the first book was, oh my gosh, it's the same as here. And it stands to reason in one sense that our physical material world in which we live here today would be a somewhat of a representation of the spirit world, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. And also, we never bring all of our soul essence to Earth to incarnate. We bring a certain percentage to Earth. For example, anywhere from usually 50 to 70% of our essence comes. But there's always a part that remains on the other side.
Remains in spirit.
Yes.
Okay. And now, is that for the purposes of knowing, sort of having that breadcrumb of sorts, so we know where we're going back to, or is it that's just what happens?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I don't really know the answer to that.
Now, it's also been described that we came from the One, and after this life, we're going back to the One. Is that a true analogy, and how does that work, especially when in the context of the conversations Dr. Newton and, of course, you have and have had with all of these individuals and their souls?
Yes. Yes, definitely the concept of oneness, that we're all one, is a thread that runs throughout all of this.
There is, let me rephrase that. Is there a creator, a universal power, and the names and list could go on and on, a God, if you will?
That's a very interesting question. There certainly is a hierarchy that has been described in multiple life between life regressions that we've learned about. Also, sometimes when we do a session, there will be a presence that seems like a very profound presence that is described from multiple sessions. I don't think we have information on that yet, but that's one of the questions that we pursue.
Now I want to talk about this from the human perspective into the spirit world. How are we connected in reference to, and again, I'm going to list off a number of different names and metaphors, the still small voice, the intuition, the gut feeling, the resonance, if you will. You know, when I talk about how you need to go to the website and check out this information, and if it resonates with you, blah, 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 blah. How does that correlate with these experiences and the LBL?
Well, we are not a body who has a soul. We are a soul who's chosen to be in a body for this specific lifetime. And our soul is connected with all of the rest of the universe. And we are not living here in nothing. While it seems that there's nothing around us but air, we know we're learning from quantum physics that everything has intelligence. We're all connected and we're all communicating. Every cell in our body has intelligence. And we're not as private with our thoughts as we think they are. They're communicated all throughout the universe.
Well, the current batch of Americans are going to be very upset about that. They value their privacy. But then the NSA will certainly tell you that you have no privacy.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that when I first got into computers and knew exactly what they were, I knew that there is no such thing anymore as privacy if you go on the internet.
Yes.
It's very interesting. Now, has there been any documentation in reference to any kind of historical information, that we didn't know all of the details about that some of these folks were able to share with us, or was that not even of interest to Dr. Newton?
Dr. Newton didn't specifically look at that per se. Although he does reference back to ancient wisdom at times in his book, one of the things that has made this a little more difficult is the writers used the knowledge that they had at that time. So sometimes what they were trying to say to us has to be decoded so that we can understand it better in light of what we're looking at today.
Okay, and in terms of being decoded, you mean because of the language at that time that was being used?
Yes, the language and the understandings that they had at that time.
Well, that
sometimes that prevented them from stating as clearly as they would have if they were in our current time occurred.
Now, obviously, many of the people that both you and he put under hypnosis for LBL, when they were incarnate in this world, they weren't necessarily English speakers. And it seems to me like that's one hurdle that I'm sure had to be dealt with as well. And I bring that up, especially when you and I had chatted earlier about, the ancient wisdom teachings of the various philosophies around the world. And especially, and I use this example of, for example, the Old Testament, the Torah of the Jewish religion, that it was written in Hebrew. And
yes,
unless you studied Hebrew and the 22 letters of the alphabet and understood what each of those letters represented numerically, tonally, vibrationally, there was a story that went along with each one of these letters. Then we started putting those letters together into words. Guess what? Big change, new tone, new numerical representation, new vibration, sentences, same thing, paragraphs, on and on. Then you take that and you translate it into another language. Guess what goes away? The legend.
Yes. Yes. Well, certainly that is a difficulty in looking at ancient wisdom, but it doesn't seem to be a difficulty usually during our actual sessions. One of my more interesting sessions, and by the way, I am from Alabama, to put this in context. One day I had a client come in who was very, very skeptical. He was a businessman, and he told me clearly, I don't believe in all of this, but I want to try it out and just see what happens. I had a very hard time in putting him into the appropriate hypnotic trance because he kept sitting up and saying, this isn't working. But finally, he just dropped into trance. And as I was leading him through a meditation, I asked him to cross a little bridge in a garden. And he said to me in a heavy southern accent, I can't. They're going to shoot me. And so I asked him, who's going to shoot you? And he said, the damn Yankees. To make a long story short, he was in the Civil War. And he went on to tell me all about what was happening there. And he kept telling me, I can't talk to you now. We got to move on.
Wow.
And at one point, he told me that his name was Willie. Later, he told me, no, my name is Pierre, really. But I don't let anybody know that.
Oh, wow.
And from then on, he started speaking in heavily accented Cajun French as Pierre. He was from Louisiana, and he was a Cajun.
Huh.
But all I had to do was say to him, Willie, I need you to speak in English so I can understand you. And he would immediately revert back to that.
Hmm. It sounds to me also like in spirit, there is no language barrier.
It's universal communication.
Yeah.
Telepathic.
That was the next thing I was thinking. It was just more telepathic. There's no verbal conversation. It's mind to mind, if you will.
Right. And yeah. I've certainly worked with people whose English was a second language,
mm-hmm.
and they would sometimes revert to their native language, but by simply asking them, please speak English so I can help you and guide you on this journey, they would revert back.
Hmm. Well, that raises another interesting question in regards to incarnating and the choices that we make. I want to go back a little further than that. We talked about the contract before, and going into each lifetime, we have a new contract. But does that necessarily invalidate the old, or are they sort of like progressive? Okay, this is page one for this lifetime, and now you're going through lifetime 5,627. So here's page 5,627, and it's sort of cumulative, and it's not per se a binding contract per se, but it's more a plan.
Right. We have free will, but we do plan things that are set to happen in our lives at certain times. We may even give ourselves signals so that we know when we've come across, say, a person we meant to meet in this lifetime or an event that we meant to happen. In a sense, these goals are progressive. They build on one another. But again, I need to say that on the other side, there is no time. Time is a construct used for learning here on Earth. So here on Earth, the goals that we set for our incarnations are progressive in nature.
It has been said that every person you interact with, even minutely, even just passing them on the street and maybe a nod of the head, hey, good morning, or how are you, or just acknowledgement, hey, there you are, they are part of your circle. They may have been a brother, a sister, a mother, a father, a child in previous lifetimes.
They may not have been part of a nuclear family, but they are in close spiritual groups to your soul group. And there's someone you've had contact with before. Not everyone in your current life is part of your soul group necessarily, but they're part of adjoining groups and they're souls that you have known on the other side.
Now, we mentioned this earlier that the soul leaves the body, might stay on Earth for a short period of time, then move on into the spirit world. As you mentioned also that there are other dimensions. But what if there is a soul who just says, I have had enough. I don't want to go any further. I don't care about my integral role in the grand scheme of things. I don't care anymore. I mean, there are those of us who are saying that right now during our current political process.
Yes.
We want out. It's not a question of, I'm going to make a choice. I don't want to make a choice. I want out. What happens? And I do remember reading in one instance where there was a soul in that state. And I guess and there are different, again, this goes back to the hierarchical thing, individuals or other souls of other temperaments or learning or categories, what have you, who might try to, and I guess the best word is entice them to continue on, but they could still choose to say, no, I don't want to.
That's right. We have free will. We all have a spirit guide, and we all have spirits on the other side who are guiding, protecting, and helping us in this lifetime. We're all watched over, in a sense. We have free will, though. We can decide we don't want to grow, and we might go for lifetimes and not make any progress. But apparently we've got all the time we need, and eventually we're going to grow.
Yeah. Now, to these other individuals, other souls with other temperaments and class standings, there are, if I'm correct, five levels of souldom. In terms of similar to our educational system, you start out in maybe preschool or kindergarten. I started out in kindergarten, and you work your way through the 12 basic grades. Then you might go on to post-secondary. Some might go on to a master's program. And as we've said, coming to Earth is a master's program. When, if ever, do we actually finally graduate? And what are we going to graduate to, if that even happens?
Yes. Well, that certainly was what we initially thought about levels. There may indeed be more levels as we continue to learn more about the afterlife and where we're going to, where we're headed. Do we ever really graduate? And if so, where do we go? Those are questions we have not really found the answers to yet.
They've been asked, but no significant answers have been given?
We're getting significant information. Mm-hmm. But as I said before, we need to aggregate large numbers of answers before we can put any credence in those answers. Sometimes there can be misinterpretations.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the movie Interstellar?
No, I haven't.
Ah, well, then I was going to ask you about a scene in that. I guess what I'm trying to do, and of course this is coming from the human side of the linear mind, trying to understand the makeup of, the design of, the structure of the spirit world. And that's why I was saying earlier about how I've always seen it sort of as in a fog or a mist or a blur, because we really don't have any blueprints. Is there any kind of description that's been given of the spirit world in that context?
In what it looks like?
In a manner of speaking, yes. How it's structured?
Well, what it looks like to the person when they first go into hypnotic trance and cross into the soul afterlife world is it looks like a sky filled with a million stars, all kinds of twinkling lights. And what other spirits look like when they first are in the afterlife, it looks like those beings are made of light. And eventually they can take on the shape or form of a body, or they could look like an orb, a globe of light. There's a lot of light in the spirit world.
Now, is some of this light coming through to this world? Because I've seen photographs of these orbs, as you speak of. Are those,
yes,
those are actual souls who are making their presence known?
That's what we think is happening, yes.
And going down a road I usually don't go down because it did not seem relevant. But from what I've read, it gives a great explanation. I'd love for you to explain it to our listeners in reference to this whole aspect of the paranormal, and especially when it comes to ghosts and movies like Poltergeist and those kinds of things that show these just horrendous entities that are just giving human beings nothing but grief.
Yes, well, I think what we find is that usually the spirit who stays around Earth after dying, instead of going directly to the afterlife, they're frightened and confused. And if they had a disagreeable personality when they were alive, they probably still got that. But we have found no evidence in the work that we're doing of anything that's destructive or demonic.
And again, there has been no evidence through your research that there is a literal heaven or a literal hell, or any of the other worlds that are described in many of the other philosophies throughout human history.
Well, some might think of the afterlife as being heaven-like because it's a very warm, accepting, free place.
Mm-hmm.
As far as hell, as it's described, no, we found no evidence of that.
I'm curious also about humans' psychic abilities to communicate with the spirit world. Have you had any conversations regarding a soul's communication with other humans while in the spirit world?
Yes. Apparently there's a lot of communication going on all the time. We're receiving guidance from our spirit guides, from others in the spirit world all the time. It could be in the form of intuition or thoughts, in the form of dreams, in the form of synchronicity, things that we hear or see, for example, a song playing on the radio or a book cover that suddenly jumps out to us.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting information all the time.
Do we have...
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say whether we are aware of it and able to interpret it, that's another question.
And being conscious, really,
yes,
really conscious. What about the aspect of us here on Earth attempting to raise the consciousness not only of ourselves, but of the planet. How does that dynamic play into all of this?
That is what's happening right now. As we learn more about ourselves and about the spirit world, and as we learn more about love and kindness through the spirit world, the consciousness of the world is being raised.
I could go on for much longer than we already have. Great information, folks. If you can make it, there is no problem. You can get to thenewtoninstitute.org. Check out the information, the videos, check out the books. This subject matter is, again, as I've said before, just so intriguing to me. I find this so fascinating. It doesn't necessarily bolster my position in things. Sometimes it actually, as I said before, can be very frustrating. But this is what we have to work with. And from a scientific standpoint, do you have difficulty, or are there people who have difficulty with it? As I sort of alluded to earlier in the program, you're saying this is scientific, but you know, you're taking me under hypnosis, and you know, who knows what I'm going to say and where that's going to come from? How do you validate the information that's coming through?
Well, first of all, I think there's a personal validation for the person who's receiving the information. Typically, the person in a regression will come out on the other side knowing what they've learned during their session. There was a resonance, an authenticity to what they experienced that allowed them to know that it was real. And as we put many of these cases together, make many observations, we're building a data set to show us what indeed might be happening.
How do animals on this planet play in this dynamic? Are there individuals who have incarnated as animals, or is that even part of the dynamic for the souls that you folks have been researching?
Animals have consciousness, as does everything on Earth. And yes, during sessions, we have encountered souls who've incarnated as animals.
Okay. So when the joke goes around that I'm coming back next time as a certain insect or what have you, that is entirely possible.
What's interesting about those souls who have reported incarnation as animals is they're always very content with their incarnation. They're not experiencing the same angst and emotions that humans do.
Yeah. Again, most extraordinary. Dr. Ann Clark, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time with us here on the program today. We'd love to have you back again. As a matter of fact, if you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, all the way out from Alabama, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Wonderful. I'd like to mention that we are currently working on a book.
Yes.
The Little Book of Life Between Lives. It's coming out in the fall of 2018.
Well, we'd love to have you back before then, but at that time as well, to talk about that. It is just so extraordinary. Like I said before, the information, it sounds right to me, folks. I mean, you know, I'm not sitting here promoting the Newton Institute. I'm trying to find the answers just like you, and this resonates with me on a grand scale. It frustrates me as well, because it answers a lot of the questions I've had, but not necessarily answers them in the way that I wanted. And that's always a concern, Dr. Clark, that you have to be careful when you ask a question, because you better be prepared for the answer or don't ask the question.
And it'll probably raise more questions.
And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. Before we let you go, I would like to ask you three final questions, as we often do of our guests here on the program. And again, thank you so much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. The first question is, who is Ann Clark?
I started out as an academic. Earlier in my life, I was a professor, a researcher. I didn't believe in anything metaphysical. It wasn't until close to the end of my career that I began finding things that I could not explain through science. And I started working with energy work. I then went into as I said, hypnotherapy, past life regression, life between life regression, and I have now turned into one who wants to bring my current metaphysical interests and experiences together with my previous scientific background. So I'm a mixture of the two right now.
Okay. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Certainly I want to achieve my own personal growth and evolvement. And secondly, because I'm a nurse, I want to bring healing to those who are suffering through this modality.
And what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose from my LBL is to be a teacher and a leader in terms of walking the spiritual path.
Dr. Ann Clark, again, thank you so much for your time, your story, and for sharing with us about the Newton Institute and Dr. Michael Newton.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan, and you have been listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.